Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, it's Don Williams with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. Man, what a treat I have for you today. Tara Nicole Kirk is a globally recognized author. She's a transformation expert, a spiritual strategist. I can't wait to get into that. She has taught at her very young age over 50,000 people how to shine their light, quit hiding their light, which most people, all people maybe, suffer from a little imposter syndrome somewhere. The most impressive thing I know about Tara is two times in her life, she turned down seven-figure deals to maintain her path on her mission. Tara, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's so funny to have what you didn't do, what you chose not to do, be one of the biggest indicators of who you are, but it's true. It's true. So I love this. Let's chat.
It is true. I think of the Warren Buffett quote, it's not what you say yes to. It's what you say no to. And he claims you should say no to about 99%
most stuff
of the things that come across your desk. What was that old saying? Just say no.
What I think is interesting, we were talking about the zeitgeist before this and the what's moving in the ether and the ways people, the trends and stuff. I think right now there's this really popular trend I'm seeing of people saying no to a thing and still defining themselves by it, by making it be like this resistance. I resist that. And I'm like, no, because spiritually, whatever you resist, you truly bind yourself to. You don't want to define yourself by what you choose to say no to. You want to say no to so that you might say yes to something else. So I teach my students, we say, I decline to participate in that. I don't have to resist with all my might. I just decline so I can go do this thing that really matters.
Let's jump right in. I'm going to take you all the way back to little Tara. Okay, so 5 years old.
Yeah.
In the house that you were raised in, or the homes that you were raised in, however that looked, was there an adult who was an entrepreneur and set an entrepreneurial example for you as a young child?
Yes, 100%. My parents both worked for the phone company. My dad is like this is still the smartest person I've ever met, which is really saying something because I've been everywhere in this world. My dad always had these, now people would probably call them side hustles.
Side hustles, yeah.
But my dad was one who, he basically had a job so good that he couldn't afford to not do it. So he got his real estate sales license and he got a contractor's license. In the time that my parents were married, they bought and sold 33 homes together, fixes and flips. They would fix and flip homes. Then my dad would do this thing where he'd buy a lot and he'd build a duplex on it, a threeplex on it, a fourplex on it, an eightplex on it. Sometimes he'd rent them out for a while. Sometimes he'd sell them. But I learned math. My dad is like a math whiz. And so he just runs math in his deal math in his head all the time. And that's how I grew up. Like, it was interesting because later in my life, I would be in the real estate business for a while. And I was a young woman then. And I noticed that all of my friends who were also young women were very intimidated by the idea of buying and selling homes and the big math. And I never had that, I think, in part because I had spent so much time doing big math with my dad on deals when I was like a very young child.
Isn't it so true that what you get used to, you just expect as normal? And so if you think small, then small is normal.
Yes.
And if you think medium, then medium's normal. And if you think huge, ginormous mammoth, then that's normal.
Yeah. And I'm in the process, Don, right now, as we do this interview, I'm in the process of moving to Europe. So I'm in all these communities of people who are making similar moves at the same time. And many of them are not entrepreneurs. It's been really interesting for me because I've been an entrepreneur for so long. Even when I wasn't an entrepreneur for stints, I still was an entrepreneur.
Sure.
And because so much of my world is filled with entrepreneurs, it's been interesting to see how other people think. I hear people say things like, oh, I can't afford that. My budget for this is X. And that's just not even a thing in my world. I'm like, when I was talking to my realtor in Portugal, I was like, my budget for a lease is like from $4,000 to $12,000 a month. It doesn't matter. I'll do whatever I love, I can flow the cash for. My income has always been very elastic. And I think normalizing that was a thing that happened growing up in my household. There was never a conversation about what wasn't available, what wasn't possible, or what we couldn't afford. It was more like, we want to send the kids to private school and we want these cars and we want this house and we want to tithe this much. So then that backs you into the math of the deals you need to do. And that was just how it was.
Yeah. And so it's what you began to accept as, well, not even began to accept. It's just what you accepted.
It's your worldview. It was like, it was and still is my worldview. And for that, I give thanks because I think my children live wonderful lives as a result of us never maybe in a bad way, even my 5-year-old literally doesn't know that affording it is a thing. She's just like, just buy another one, mama. And I'm like, well, yes. And we also take care of the things we have.
Yeah.
She's like, just get another one.
Yeah, I've got a good friend and they're Chinese. And he was talking to me about his daughter has become so reliant on, I'll use the word maid, the person who helps in the house.
Yes.
That her mother said, I need you to clean up your room. And she said, they will do it.
Does it.
Oh, we may be a little off track here with the 3-year-old.
My 5-year-old doesn't make her bed. But I have recently, actually, so we have an au pair at home and we have a part-time nanny and she goes to full-time school. And I have recently challenged the people, and we have housekeepers, and I've been challenging them to include her. Not in a way that, just because I think it's good for kids, it's good to know how to make your bed. She doesn't know how to do that.
It is good to know how to make your bed.
But also good to know that it's good for her to see that I know how to get help. Our lives are beautiful, and we get to spend a lot of time doing the things that are important to us because we have all these people who help us. So nobody's job is above or below somebody else's job. It's like we all exist in this beautiful ecosystem. And I love that I get to support so many other people in their businesses or in their goals.
And there's a certain nobility in any labor, no matter what it is. There's just a certain nobility in any labor. So tell me about your current company. Your current company is Soul Tour, okay?
It's called Soul Tour. Yeah. Yep. It is not an R&B music concert. I'll tell you that. Because every once in a while, someone's like, Soul Train. And I'm like, no, not Soul Train.
Now, they got some miles on them. I know what Soul Train is. But they got some miles on them if they know what that is.
They do, right?
Yeah.
Those are my favorite kind of people. We are a personal growth school. We are a school of life mastery, money mastery, it's self-mastery. We offer group coaching programs, individual coaching programs, and lots of various courses and ways you can engage with us. But the core of what we do is we help I call them the ambitious spiritual maximalists. So people who are deeply spiritual and also deeply smart and deeply successful, but probably not all the way fulfilled. So people come to us when they really are like starting to ask that question in their lives of, if I don't be my big self and do my big dreams now, when will I? And so they come to us for help doing their big dreams, learning who their real true self really is and what their real true self really wants, and then fulfilling their biggest potentials and their biggest dreams before they die. And for most of our people, those big dreams include the calling to build an empire of their soul, to build an actual highly aligned, highly profitable business empire, brand, sometimes even like media podcast, you know, YouTube channel, whatever it is that transmits the transformational message or life's work that they came here to create. So we helped them build the empires they were born to build, and not just to the end of making money, but so that they might also live the lives that they were born to live. That's what we do at Soul Tour.
I love that. Yeah. And it took me a while to figure out what my mission really was.
Yeah.
But once I was able to define with laser precision, everything else began to fall in line.
Snaps into place.
And if it doesn't fit my mission, I just say no, regardless of how attractive it may seem to be in the temporary, because it's not meant for me. It's
it
something
can be great
good
for someone else.
It's something good for somebody. For someone else. It just doesn't happen to be me.
And, hey, but like, I think what you've just said, a super elegant way of talking about what this work is. And there is a hero's journey that underlies getting there. Like, you just said it, and these people listening to us talk right now heard it as a 30-second statement, but it can take people years to get out of the scarcity that I call the trance of fear, the fear of what will happen when you're no longer getting doing what you do for external validation, but for internal validation, the trance of scarcity. That breaking the trance of scarcity has to happen for you to have the courage to say no to wonderful opportunities. And wonderful opportunities will come. Do you know the book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks? Beautiful book. And he talks about the four zones of like human endeavor. There's your zone of incompetence. Great. You shouldn't be there. Zone of competence really shouldn't be there either. But that zone of excellence and zone of genius is where the smart, successful, spiritual ones get hung up, because in your zone of excellence is where people will pay you a lot of money and make great offers to you to stay there and not come into your zone of genius. And those are the offers I think almost every one of our clients, because so many of them are coming out of successful careers in corporate or successful businesses that they often have that thing where, like, on the archetypal hero's journey, where the hero is like issued a call to the adventure over and refuses the call a bunch of times before they accept the call, right? Yeah. Because doing your capital B, capital D big dreams causes you to feel exposed. It causes you to feel vulnerable. I tell my students when they come in, they almost all are like, I'm very excited and terrified. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you are paying attention. That is a sign you're doing it right. If there's no fear, are you really even getting outside your comfort zone? If so, I'm like, you're doing it right. You're paying attention. That's why you feel that. And we help them work with transmuting that energy of fear into the awe at their own coming expansion. And we give them skills for recalibrating their nervous system, recalibrating out of these trances of fear and scarcity and trauma sometimes that cause people. Someone who didn't have the childhood that I have financially can come to the entrepreneurial table with some real serious in their body, visceral reactions to some of the things that you will be challenged with doing as an entrepreneur. So we help them work on integrating that, deactivating that in their energies. And then is the real fun part, because then, and only after you've done that work, are you really in position to meet your real self and let your real self set your real purpose and your real vision and your real desires and your real intentions and your real goals, when fear is no longer hijacking your real self, when fear is no longer hijacking the driver's seat of your life.
I love that. And you know, when he talked about the zones, and so like excellence and magnificence, excellence and genius, I know for myself, and I think for most people, the zone of excellence is like a temptress. It wants me to stay there because I'm good at all this stuff. I'm better than most people in the world, but there is no risk. There is no vulnerability. I can't really fail in that zone. And so that tells me it's the wrong place.
It tells you it's a shadow of the right place. Usually there's some essence to it that's like kind of almost kind of sort of, you can tell yourself. That was me at my Fitness Pal. I was the chief marketing officer at one of the largest health and fitness companies that has ever existed, my Fitness Pal. And I loved it. And I loved the people that started that company. I loved our team. I loved our 2-year run from 45 million to 120 million customers and a half billion, almost half billion dollar acquisition. It was a wonderful ride. And I was still doing this thing where I was like, all right, what do I care about? I care about coming against the number one source of self-sabotage in human experience, which is internalized repression. Okay. Internalized repression, all the self-sabotage stuff. I care about people knowing that they are deeply beloved of this universe, whether they ever lose a pound or not, whether they ever earn another dollar or not, whether they ever start a business or not. But what I know people really want is to lose weight. So how about I work in weight loss, but I have this huge platform and I can slip all these other messages in. I can slip in all these messages about radical self-acceptance. I can slip in all these. If your career or most of your day is spent head faking people into the real thing that you actually care about, it's entirely possible that this is a shadow for you and you're in your zone of excellence, not genius. And Don, I tell you the wildest thing. I see this every single day. They hear me a little bit on a thing and they're like, okay, I'm going to take her advice. I'm going to let myself want what I really want. And they sit in their daily ritual or meditation or whatever, and they catch a vision for what they want to do with their real calling, their real big dreams. And they start working on it. And what they build is still a shadow version of that. It's because there's all this perform, conform, produce conditioning that happens in us when we're very little in this culture around what it's like success is at the end of this treadmill where you just keep checking these boxes that of what culture calls success. And even if you're doing that, and even if you're achieving that and you're performing and you're getting that validation, it's never gonna feel fulfilling. And that's why you see people be like, gosh, I got a call the other day. I made my first $1 million at my job last year, Tara. Why does it feel so bad? Hi, welcome to you're about to accept your call to the adventure of doing what you really came here to do.
Here's what I know about comfort zone physics. We like our comfort zones because it's comfortable. But when we leave our comfort zone, when we step outside our comfort zone, when we get in the frame, our comfort zone grows.
It does.
And then we leave again and it grows and it grows. Leave again and it grows. And one of my favorite quotes and why everybody ought to get out of their comfort zone, and this is a wise philosopher, is that you're far better, far smarter, far stronger than you think.
Yes.
And that was Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh.
I love it.
One of my favorite quotes of all time. And I'm a big fan of wise words. Aristotle, Socrates, all of them.
Yeah.
But Christopher Robin had it going on.
Robin was awesome. We listened to, in my household, we listened to a lot of kid audiobooks.
Yeah.
And there's like on YouTube has a rendition of the whole long original Winnie the Pooh that we'll listen to for hours on end. It's great.
Yeah.
Also think awesome. That Winnie the Pooh in that version of the book was like the OG body positivity, radical self-acceptance, like guru. He's in the mirror being like, hey, I'm short, stout, and I'm like great with that. Know why I like to exercise? Because it makes me hungrier so I can eat more honey. Yes, Winnie the Pooh.
That's right. There you go. Okay, so I'm still back at Little Tara.
Yes, Little Tara. Okay.
Your parents did a great job. What a great example.
Yeah, they were nuts too, to be clear. They were also crazy. I say that because my parents were geniuses, are still geniuses, and are still somewhat crazy. And I say that because I think that when you do experience childhood trauma, it can be so wired into your nervous system that you don't necessarily know there's another world beyond that.
Yeah.
And I think or with entrepreneurship, a lot of people, when they realize that their trauma is part of their self-sabotage, they think they have to wait until they've totally healed the trauma to start the thing, not understanding that the kinds that, you know, the callings of your soul businesses will take you on a path to heal whatever needs healing. Like I say all the time, you think that the business exists for you to work on it. I invite you to the point of view that the business has work it wants to do in you.
Okay. You and me are going to be friends.
I can already tell.
A long time.
I agree.
I love that. Okay. So back to young Tara.
Yes, little Tara.
Okay. The first job or the first entrepreneurial venture you had, but the first place that you made money.
I tried to sell my brother in the grocery store when he was born. My mother did not let me, so I did not make money doing that. But I did try, and I was charging $25, which I feel like was pretty good in 1980. So that was the thing that happened. And my mom tells that story every time people are like, when did you know she was an entrepreneur? She was five. And yeah, so that happened. The other story she tells all the time that is awful, but also...
That's the one we want.
Yeah, I know. Oh my gosh. The preschool teachers would pay me $1 to watch the other kids during nap time so they could go to the corner store next door. And my mother found out about that. I'm four, but I don't need to take a nap like those kids. I need to sit with the teachers who are drinking coffee. Four years old. And I just always was that, probably too old for my body.
Yeah.
I ain't a kid. I like to think in retrospect that they maybe just were humoring me and went to the back of the school or something, but my mom tells it as though she got wind of it and it was like a problem for her that she's paying them to watch me and I'm like watching these things. One thing that was very pivotal or was very formative for me in my entrepreneurship approach was that my parents were part owners in a racket club when I was 7, 8, 9, 10. And I got to sit behind the snack bar. Racket clubs are so weird because there's all this like physical exertion. Racket sports are super intense physically. But then we always had a big screen TV and a big leather couch, and we always served like fries and beer. So I don't know what the philosophy was there. But I remember sitting, like, I was very excited to be at the snack bar. I got to serve you some fries. I'm sure I wasn't supposed to be able to, but that's what was happening. And I also got to see, it was that Jane Fonda, and we had an aerobics room. So I got to see these women, like, first of all, get dressed up in all their aerobics gear and come hang out with their friends and work out, which was like, I thought that was, being a 40-year-old woman working out with my friends has been my vision, dream, and goal since I was like 8. So now I feel like I've very much arrived in life because I'm doing it.
There you go.
But I also became very fascinated with like self-sabotage and behaviors and how people would come and they would be there every day for a while and then they would fall off and you'd never see them again. Like that idea that people know what it is that they're supposed to do and really struggle with getting themselves to do it became very fascinating to me then. It is still the core thing that I work on in the world. I had a coach ask me one time what problem you would feel you would be excited to work on for 30 years. And I'm like, I've literally been working on that problem for 30 years.
I think that is such a worthy calling. I want you to say it again. Knowing what you're...
Yes. Knowing... Listen, fitness is the best example. Everybody knows they need to eat less and exercise more. There will never be another answer to how to improve your fitness. That's always been the answer. That will always be the answer. Everybody knows that. Yeah. They don't need help knowing what to do. They struggle with getting themselves to actually do it.
Yeah.
And getting themselves to actually do it in ways that will work consistently long term, which sometimes means in ways that are fun.
Yeah.
So I've always been fascinated at that. I still am fascinated by that. I think humans are messy and marvelous. I love that. And I think that was a huge like understanding. So my whole entree to that topic was through the lens of my parents offering this entrepreneurial solution to that problem. And I think if I knew my gym served fries and beer, maybe I would go more. I don't. Maybe not, but yeah.
I think today that's not going to happen.
It's probably not a good plan. It's
probably not. Good.
No. And so there was always like one heart attack a year at that place. And I just think...
In the days of Google reviews and Yelp...
Not great.
As a gym, you probably can't have...
No.
We got a 4.2 rating with 0.75 heart attacks a year.
Not great.
Probably not going to work.
No.
So I want you to think back across your marvelous career.
Yeah.
And I want you to think about an event where when it happened, it was like, oh, can't believe I'm going to have to go through this pain. Okay. Mm. But maybe today, in retrospect, where you have some distance and you can look back and you're not looking forward and you're not looking down in it, but where you can look back, where maybe that event was one of the significant events of your life. And so do you have a hard moment you could share with us?
Yeah, 2008. I was in the real estate business then. So how fun is it to be in the real estate business during the real estate recession?
Yeah.
It was awful. 2008 was a year I basically lost everything. I lost my business. I got divorced. One of my children went back to live with their father. It was so bad. And it was so wonderful in terms of the insight and who I became in that time. In that time, the first thing that happened was it got me off the treadmill. Remember, I was talking about that treadmill where you're doing the success stuff. I was like, I have an old set of kids and a new kid. So my old kids, which I do call them, by the way, they don't love it.
I was going to say, do they know you call them old kids?
They're like, we're the old kids, we know. I had, one of them is adopted and one of them, the biological one of them, I had when I was 16 years old, or I was 17 years old, 16 when I got. So I had this really intense lifetime as a child, a very highly gifted child, high-performing child, highly validated child, then made this like kind of wild, like left turn in my life. And through a series of miracles, managed to start college when I was 16, got my master's degree and got my law degree. People just showed up and kept paying for it and kept inviting me to further education. And I took them up on it. So I had been just one of those people that was feeling like I was making up for my mistakes in life by checking the boxes, doing it all right. And 2008 was when I really got the message that you can't outperform unwanted events happening in your life. There is no world in which you get to do it so right by some, I don't know, external standard that nothing bad happens to you.
Yeah.
All right. So I was like, all right, God, noted. Noted. And that's a little bit untethering in ways that are wonderful and very challenging in the moment of them. Because if you've lived your whole life up to then following the cultural checklist, there's this moment where you're like, oh, I get it. That doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And now how do I navigate my life? Now how do I decide what's next when external validation or like money or the prestige of whatever is not going to be the thing? You got to learn who you really are. And one thing that I noticed in that time was, especially because I was actually in the real estate business, I got observant. I observed something that will stand people in good stead in this season, which is that there are people who will thrive in any climate. It does not matter what is happening in the market. It does not matter what the economic crisis is. It doesn't matter, recession, pandemic, whatever. There are people who will thrive with integrity, not by taking advantage or looting or whatever. And so I got out to understand, to study almost, like, what was it that was causing some people to thrive and others to not? And came to the conclusion in that time that only, like, we all think it's about getting our decisions right and making the right moves and having the right strategies. And it's really not. I think if there's an 80-20 rule, only 20% of whether you thrive in a crisis like that is based on your actual strategic decisions. I think the other 80% is based on your inner well-being. Are you clear-minded enough to make a bold executive decision, see what works and what doesn't work, course correct? Are you grounded enough? Can you prevent from, if all entrepreneurship is an emotional roller coaster, entrepreneurship during a global economic crisis is like the roller coasteriest of the roller coasters, right? Can you get yourself out of those low vibration moments? Or do you dwell there for a year? You know what I mean? That's the stuff that really matters. So in that time, I really did a ton of being my own daily rituals and practices that kept me out of the spiral and moving forward and kept me on this continuous course correcting using my own inner guidance as a navigator. And those practices and rituals are literally now the programs that we teach at Soul Tour, or they're a big component of the programs that we teach at Soul Tour, but I had no idea that's how that would be. I had no idea this would end up being like my actual life's work I was creating out of my response to a crisis.
Yeah, I love that. So many times I think entrepreneurs and non-entrepreneurs, we get real tactical. Yes. Things happen and we get real tactical. Well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. And I know in my own life, and what I help my clients with is this, is wait a minute. Let's get real quiet.
That.
And let's let our creative brain, which is where the genius is.
Yes.
The creative brain, it work, okay? And it, you can't make it punch in at 8 and out at 5.
You can't.
It won't work like that.
No.
But if we get quiet enough and we disengage from the noise, the chatter of the world, our creative brain will come to life.
Yeah.
And the answer's in there.
It's there.
I can't tell you why or how. I just know that it is.
Yep.
And so do that. I love that.
And there's a what I want to name is that one is you can't make a punch in at 8. However, you can train it. You can give your inner editor and your inner censor a little time off every single day in a ritual way that, and you can capture those golden threads of inspiration from your creative mind and you can follow them. So this is what I see is people get the downloads, but they are so used to overruling and overriding their own moments of clarity that come through their creative mind or like trying to rationalize their way out of it or logic it. The creative mind is not logical or linear, but you train it to speak more loudly when you follow it. You create this feedback loop in yourself when all the amazing, perfect place, perfect time moments happen because you followed it, then you learn to trust it more. My friend Artie Wu is a meditation teacher, and he's always, sometimes the muse, we talk about this together, sometimes the muse speaks and what you get is a download of a 25-year business plan. But sometimes the muse speaks and it tells you to go get a burrito. And you go get the burrito and like on the way to the burrito, you see a thing and it inspires a thing. You got to allow for it to light the natural next steps to what you desire and are called to do to light up in natural ways before you step by step. And it's not always going to be the comfort zone style action plan. Sometimes it's literally, this is the thing I got to do today. I got to email that guy. I got to call that person. Sometimes I'm like, who do I already know? Who knows the answer to this thing? That's my inspiration a lot of times. Call, they already know.
Yeah, yeah.
But your thinking mind doesn't always get you there. Your creative mind gets you there.
Okay, this is the toughest question.
Ooh.
You're going to kill it. But many times, this is the toughest question I ask. So I'm putting you in a time machine.
Okay.
Just Star Wars or Star Trek. Put you in a time machine. Going to send you back to 20-year-old Tara.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Can you see her?
I can.
Okay. And when you get there, you're going to get 60 or 90 seconds to share something you wish 20-year-old Tara knew then that you know now that would have eased your path, accelerated your pace, provided more peace. So today, back to 20-year-old Tara, there she is. What do you tell her?
I say, you have permission. Here is your permission slip. You get to want what you want. You get to go where you want to go. When it feels good to you, that is a sign that it's the right path for you. You get to permission granted. And there's something that one of my teachers from 150 years ago taught me that I hold fast to right now that I wish I had heard this earlier in life, where she said, never quit in the middle of a hunch. Never quit in the middle of a hunch. So if you get a hunch or an inspiration to do it, like, just do it. You don't have to figure out all of the how. You don't have to figure that all out. Let the divine handle the how, right? You just decide what, you decide why. You get a hunch, you keep going, do not quit in the middle. And don't worry about figuring out the how. That will light up. Also, you're really cute. So definitely drink the chlorella and the collagen that you're tempted to, because when you're 50, you'll be really grateful to your 20-year-old self. That is like the number one thing people come to me for is how to do their dreams. The number two thing is, whoa, what are you drinking? As I am for sure coming up on 50 year, and chlorella and collagen will do you really well.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. So as the attorney would say, I reserve the right to recall the witness for another interview.
I love that.
Yeah. But I think we're in the fourth quarter for today. Yeah. Tell me, how can the Proven Entrepreneur Tribe, how can we support you, Tara?
Yes, I love that. If you're a person who, when I say that, I say things like big self and big dreams, or upgrade your dream, or if you know that the only thing between you and the greatness you're destined for is self-sabotage, the self-sabotage of your inner critic in particular, I want you to come meet me at soultour.com/affirmations. Okay. And there's a bunch of things you're going to get when you come there. You'll come there, you'll enter your information. First thing you'll get is my Transformation Tuesday newsletter. It is full of like modern parables and insights that help smart, successful people actually build the empires they came here to build. On that page, when you fill out your information, you'll also get a quick audio training on how to breathe new, fresh life into your old dreams. Mm-hmm. And we'll send you a set of affirmations to transform your inner critic. And I just want to remind people that our flagship program at Soul Tour is called Empires of the Soul. We have many different ways people can enter that program if they want my help and my team's help creating the empire they came here to create. So if you think that is of interest to you, I invite you to come to soultour.com/apply, and you'll fill out a little information, tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll reach back out to you to book a call and see whether we should be working together.
Love that. Love that. Love that. Okay, folks, soultour.com. Just go through the entire website. Look at everything Tara has to offer. Tara Nicole Kirk, thank you.
Thank you, Don. This was such a delight.
So glad you're here today. And that's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur Show.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to ProvenEntrepreneurShow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.